I can sleep here tonight, can't I?
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow? There's no people like show people. They smile when they are alone. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you opened and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they hung a star. Let's go. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your papa has parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. A couple of interesting shows to talk about here on the program today. We're going to, first of all, join our friends over at Kansas City Actors Theater, where they are presenting Master Harold and the Boys, a play set in South Africa back in 1948, you know, way before the end of apartheid, and we're going to get a flavor of what's going on, perhaps what life was like in South Africa at that time. Here to tell us all about it, two outstanding actors you've seen many times before. Walter Coppedge is with us. He plays the role of Sam the waiter in the show. Walter is a KCAT founder. He has performed in Chicago with the Steppenwolf Theater, in Washington, D.C. with the Studio Theater, has been an actor and director with Spinning Tree, has performed and will be performing again at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, has been at the Unicorn Theater, many others, also the Coterie as well. Yes, we don't want to forget the Coterie.
No, we don't.
Yes, Jeff would be disappointed if you didn't mention it. Thank you. Welcome once again.
It's good to be here.
Walter has a good perspective to talk about foreign shows because Walter is part Asian himself as well as being African American. Arthur Clifford is with us. He plays the role of Harold. His parents own this restaurant in South Africa. He has performed in Into the Woods, Johnson County Theater in the Park. He has the role of Jack. So mm-hmm. He planted those beans. Was that a smart move? He has performed at the Barn Players, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Do I have that title?
That is correct.
That was a difficult role to do, but I may touch on that.
Sure.
Later on, but it had to have been for you. The White Theater in Cabaret. That was a rousing edition of Cabaret. Congratulations on that. Musical Theater Heritage and OCTA, the Olathe Community Theater Association. Welcome to the show. This your first time here with us?
Yes, it is. Thank you for having me.
We will make it as painless as we possibly can, okay? Welcome, both of you. Boy, Master Harold and the Boys. Mm-hmm. Just right smack dab during apartheid.
Yes.
As things were going on, What was life like for a person who, for instance, was a waiter, like your character in the show, during that time? He had to have been on pins and needles most of the time.
Well, I'm sure that life was like that. I mean, this is the play itself is set in 1950, but in 1948, 2 years prior to that, is when apartheid was institutionalized as the law of the land in South Africa. Prior to that, blacks and whites did live together, work together. But in the beginning of this play, what we're seeing is the separation that's happened. Young Hallie, Arthur's character, has grown very close to Sam and Willie, the two waiters there. And part of that is because Sam and Willie lived in the boarding house in which they worked. But now they live many, many miles away because of separation. And so the atmosphere is changing to one that's much more rigid and one that's much more drawn along racial and class lines. And those lines are starting to hem in on the relationship that young Hallie, and in particular young Hallie and Sam have, which is a very close relationship.
The playwright, why this particular topic? Is he talking about something he may have experienced?
It's very much a semi-autobiographical work. He has addressed the fact that this is, I think how he put it was, there was a sin that I committed as a young man. And this is my way of trying to atone for it, although I may never do that. But at least he's, this is an incredibly brave piece by him because he's cracking open his chest and showing you who he really is or was. And the beauty of this show is that we know who he will become, that this incredible man of words and of righteousness and of equality.
What about you, Arthur? How do you... It's a different perspective, of course, that you have than the two other gentlemen featured in the show. You're, on one level, I guess you're friends with them, but they work for your family at the same time. That has to be a very difficult road to tiptoe through.
It is, because Hallie and Sam and Willie have essentially grown up together. Hallie has known them since he was a very young boy. And he was someone who didn't see race as much and did not see color as much as the older generations. So he had no problem befriending them from a young age. But as you'll see in a lot of the show, some of his insecurities manifest itself in a very negative way, pushing back on some of that relationship that they might have fostered beforehand. But it's a very interesting dichotomy, having sort of a taboo friendship, but a very deep bond. So in a way, he was a very progressive person for the time in South Africa.
From what I've read, your character also has some problems with his own father. I mean, their relationship is not the strongest. So, boy, that puts you in a very unusual position. You're kind of against your father. You're friends with them, and I suppose that probably doesn't help your relationship with your father.
Right. And in many ways, Hallie's relationship with Sam is one of a father and son, because Hallie's own father was, you know, somewhat of a drunk, not very much there for him throughout his youth. So Sam was able to step in and be that role model that he really needed as he was developing.
It won a Drama Desk Award for Best Play, semi-autobiographical, as we're saying. To what degree does this affect the way the characters interact? For instance, Walter is your character, and the other gentleman, which we haven't mentioned yet.
Willie, who is played by Khalif Gillette, brilliant young actor here in town.
How does this affect your relating to him? Yes, he's a friend on a certain level, but someone you probably are always suspicious of, at least to a degree.
I think Sam's relationship with Hallie, I mean, what we get to see is the purity of that relationship, in the sense that it's one that's based in mutual respect and love and admiration, a desire to kind of see each other do well in life and in the world. But poor Hallie is subjected to so much from his parents, and actually so much from society. I mean, yes, Sam and Willie are beaten down by a system of apartheid, but the system of oppression also imprisons the oppressor. And so poor Hallie is trapped in this world as well. He's as big a victim as anybody else. And when your default setting is the one to scramble back to your racial privilege, then that says a lot about you. And I think in a time like we're in right now in America, where we cannot speak to each other about differences that we have, that we are so isolated from each other, and we've shut down from even thinking about crossing over and talking to somebody who has very different views and perspectives, I think this play says a lot about that, how we can bridge those gaps by a mutual respect and love.
Do you have a philosophy towards the part there, Arthur?
Kind of just what I touched on earlier, that Hallie was very much of a progressive, and I think Athel Fugard, the playwright, mirrors a lot of Hallie's life, hence why it's semi-autobiographical in nature. So as Walter mentioned, it's, although it is tragic to see somewhat of Hallie's downfall throughout the course of the show, him retreating into his racial privilege, we get to know the end of the story, because we know that Athel Fugard went on to become this great man of magnitude, creating this wonderful show. So we knew that there is somewhat of a redemption arc for him.
Show opens real soon. Previews start on the 11th, just a few days away from right now. Performances in preview also are on Thursday the 12th, Friday the 13th, and I noticed they decided to open it after the 13th. Yes. The official opening is on Saturday the 14th at Kansas City Actors Theater. Of course, the performances take place at the City Stage Theater on the lower level of Union Station, I should say. The Union Station actually has an address if you want to MapQuest things. 30 West Pershing Road, the number to call for more information. Central Ticket Office, by the way, 816-235-6222. Or you can hop online at kcactors.org. Speaking with Walter Coppedge and Arthur Clifford. Of course, a difficult role. Any particular challenges in this role? For instance, do you attempt an accent?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We've been through some extensive dialect training and work with a couple of great dialect coaches with this. It is difficult. I've come to find that all of Athel Fugard's works are difficult. That's maybe part of what makes the work so important, that it's not an easy play to approach as an actor, you know, to have to live this world every night. But the commitment to live this world is to tell this incredible truth that I think we all need to be reminded of right now, mm-hmm. that there's more to life than just being right. And there's more to life than being on top. There's the matter of connections and empathy and compassion and growing together, and that we often create the families that we want around us by friends and people that we meet, and sometimes those are the strongest influences on us as opposed to our parental units. Because poor Hallie is trapped in a lot of young kids experience now, which is they find a lot of these ACE inhibitors, adverse childhood experiences. And this young man is definitely going through that with his alcoholic father, who he basically has to be the parent for. And no child should ever have to go through that.
A different situation. Would you have probably worked at the restaurant after school? Or with apartheid, does that make this just impossible?
I think it makes it somewhat impossible. I think Hallie would still think that it's somewhat beneath him to subject himself to being a waiter. And I think in some ways Hallie does use his privilege to his benefit. So I don't think he would necessarily work there, but he does enjoy going to the restaurant after school to spend time with Sam and Willie.
What does he learn from them? He can't be so blind that he doesn't pick up on things.
Absolutely not. I think the main thing that Hallie learns throughout the course of the show, and there's this wonderful allusion and metaphor that we use throughout the show of Hallie sitting alone on a bench that might be for a specific race, and Sam tells him that he does not have to sit up there alone. It is Hallie's choice who he wants to be as a man as he continues. And I think that's the biggest thing that Hallie learns, is he is not trapped to repeat the same mistakes that his parents make. And he can be the catalyst for change in his society.
Under the system of apartheid, does everyone, for instance, his father, we know he was an alcoholic, mm-hmm. he had this restaurant, if he decided not to follow all the rules of apartheid, would he be in big trouble with the government in a situation? For instance, had he put his son to work after school, would he have suffered for that?
I don't know. To be perfectly honest, I'm not exactly sure what the legal ramifications are. I'm sure there were some, because there was no race mixing. But there were progressives. Fugard himself comes out of this era. And when told that blacks and whites could not be in the same theater production, he did it anyway. They would do roving plays. They would literally go in, do a play in one place, and then leave because the cops were coming. And then the next night, through word of mouth, they would be somewhere else. And they did a traveling production of Antigone that way, which was fascinating, with a black and white company. So there were people that were defying it. And in the show, we even talk about a few South African heroes who are trying in 1948 and 1950 to rectify things. They see the future. In fact, one character one person that's mentioned is a General Smuts, who, when he first came to power, was very much into segregation, began to look at the bigger picture, and a few years later said, this is an impossible task, that there's no way that we cannot live together. We have to live together to advance and survive.
Population-wise, African-Americans, that would be the correct term.
African-Africans, yes.
But the Africans, I guess it would be the correct mm-hmm. term, outnumbered population-wise,
yes,
the white population by a lot, I recall.
A great deal, yeah, a great deal. But it's, that's the form of colonialism. South Africa has been conquered several times, and that's often how it works. I mean, the Congo was held by the French. They had a tiny, tiny colony there and a large population. Yeah. Of natives there.
Once they started being boycotted, we're jumping ahead of the storyline here, it made things just impossible to stay
sure.
the same.
Yeah, and I think that's what it sometimes takes, is the eyes of the world to be turned on a situation like that. Kind of like it's happening to us. The eyes of the world is turning to America and going, what's going on? And I think that's exactly what happened to South Africa.
And you've had a lot of challenging roles. I've seen you in many of those. How does this one compare? There's challenges. Mm-hmm. I would think this would be a lot of challenges.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it certainly is. It's not an easy part, but there's I always look for a way in. What's my end to this character? And for Sam, there's an easy end for me, which is, as Arthur just put it, Sam's relationship with Hallie is one of a father and son. Well, I'm a dad. So that lends me to understand what it's like to see a young person suffering, to see a young person struggling, and to shore him up, and to tell him the right things in the right moment, to be there for that kid when their adult parental figure isn't there for them.
Well,
that's an important thing.
Well, sure, he's struggling, but it's nothing compared to your struggles.
In some ways, but I think what Sam sees in Hallie is the future, which is what I see in all the young actors that I work with. I see the future, and my time is now. Their time is tomorrow. And so I think with Sam and Hallie, yeah, this is a world that he can't enter, but it's a world he couldn't enter anyway because it's the world of tomorrow. That's where Hallie dwells, in the house of tomorrow, the house of hope.
As a performer, Arthur, how do you look at this? It has to be a struggle for you, too. You're performing a young man who believes probably a lot differently than you actually believe yourself.
I will throw this in, that you're saying it's difficult for me. I think it's a much more difficult play for this young man.
So you're playing a character who believes much differently, or has been trained to believe a lot differently from what you probably believe in yourself.
Right.
And do you expect criticism from that? I'm always amazed. I've had actors tell me that sometimes people treat them like their character, which makes it very difficult sometimes because they're not their character.
Absolutely. You definitely have to go to a lot of dark places for a lot of these roles. And I certainly hope people do not judge me on my character based on how I act in the show. But my biggest challenge with this role is, and I could probably speak for all three of us, is the twists and turns, the highs and lows that we experience. The play is only 90 minutes without an intermission. and the amounts of changes in pace and tone and feel and emotion that we go through can be very emotionally draining. So I think that will also show in the audience. They might be a little tired after the show just because you laugh, you'll cry, and everything in between. So between having to play a young 17-year-old South African boy, learning the dialect, having the youthful energy of him, having the quick wit that he has, embodying a voice of change, and going through all of the emotions in 90 minutes, it is definitely one of the more challenging roles.
And you know, the dichotomy of everything that goes on, how you interact. Do you interact with Walter's fellow employee the same way that you deal with Walter?
Not necessarily. I think what I love about the show is the special connection between Hallie and Sam. That's not as much there with Willie, because Sam has been a part of Hallie's life for longer, but they are definitely the three musketeers in this story. But something about Hallie's relationship with Sam, I think, is really going to resonate with audiences.
Is it just the three of you?
Just the three.
Yeah, three-person show?
The whole time? That in itself makes it difficult for you, especially if it's 90 minutes without a break.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've probably been in some plays where they were long acts.
Oh, yes.
But this is probably one of the longer ones.
Well, but I tell you what, it's one of those where I don't really feel the time. It's one rainy afternoon. And what I love about this play is it takes place in real time. We don't have a fade out and, you know, 6 hours later, the next morning, you know, in another room across the world. No. This all takes place in 90 minutes. And in those 90 minutes, we're going to see this incredible, you know, arc of this story come through. And I love that. So there's also the pressure of that time, of it's all taking place in real time.
Without customers, I guess,
yes,
during
exactly.
the 90 minutes.
It's a rainy, slow afternoon, which allows this play to take place.
Sure. It has to be difficult. Tell me about the character who's not here today. Tell
Willie.
Us about him and how he fits in as well.
Willie is also an employee. Yes, he's younger. He's about 30. Sam himself is 50, so he's about 20 years younger. As Arthur said, yeah, he's a later employee, but he's also part of this group, part of this trio. Willie is, because he's younger, he's a little more of a hothead, quick to emotions. But what's fascinating is that by the end, Willie's the one who's talking reason and calm and seeing the long picture and seeing hope in the future. So the young man who we've watched be volatile and have his struggles turns out to be this wonderful voice of reason and this great touchstone of love and hope at the end.
The show was set, as you said, in 1948. That's before a lot of the civil rights movement in this country.
Yeah.
Did you look, or were the people even aware of what was happening or starting to happen in the United States?
I think so.
Did they relate that to their situation?
I think so. I know that when Mandela started, he was aware of the civil rights movement in America. And in 1948, the African National Congress comes right on the heels of the apartheid system being there. It's kind of a direct result of it. Nelson Mandela is coming to speak out, and a lot of the South African black leaders are starting to emerge. So it's just the beginnings of this civil rights movement.
Show opens in previews on the 11th. Previews on the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. The official opening is on Saturday the 14th and runs through the 29th. There is a special performance on the 23rd on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Which is an industry night, so that is geared mostly towards those in the industry. But you don't have to be in the industry. Come on down. But we'll have specials, and we'll do a special show on Monday.
I see that there's two performances on Saturday, the 28th, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. But basically, it is a Wednesday through Sunday production with a matinee on Sunday, a matinee also on the 28th at 2, as well as the evening performance at 7:30 on the 28th as well. The Kansas City Actors Theater and their production of Master Harold and the Boys. Arthur Clifford is Master Harold. Yep. Did you have to refer to him as Master Harold?
I mostly refer to him as Hallie.
I see.
But you'll see.
Okay.
Come on down.
The number to call for more information, the Central Ticket Office number, 816-235-6222, or online at kcactors.org. Plans from here, Walter? I'm going to ask Arthur, too.
Well, after this will be Christmas Carol at the Rep, and then in February, I'm going to the center stage at the Portland Armory to work with Marissa Wolf again.
That's right.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Two of the people from the Rep went
Chip
out
Miller
there.
and Marissa Wolf. I'm very excited to be reunited.
I'll bet you are. Yeah. What about Arthur?
I don't have any performance plans, but I will be vocal directing a production of Sioux Skull the Musical out at Lee Summit North High School. And I just got married a few months ago, so I'm looking forward to actually getting to spend some time with my wife and my new dog.
The actress' life is one of parsing time.
Oh, yes, we're both actors.
She knows, because she's an actor, too.
She is, so we see each other for about 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night.
Good luck, both of you. Has to be a difficult part to play. Played in period, of course, so costuming and all of that.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to assume then white waiters' outfits. And was there anything psychological, do you think, behind that?
With the costuming?
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, what I like about it is that these guys are in their in very subservient outfits. But that's not the relationship that we have.
It doesn't sound like
it's this really friendly and warm and joking and jovial relationship. And one that's, you know, often going to be strained in this 90 minutes, but you cannot deny the connection between them, between all three of them.
Well, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Both have
a full
schedule. Walter Coppedge plays the role of Sam, a KCAT founder, has performed with the Steppenwolf in Chicago, the Washington Studio Theater. He's been a director. You want to do more directing? Or?
Sure, why not? I mean, I love that you gave me actor director. Well, yeah, I'm an actor who has been fortunate enough to direct three shows. So let me get a few more under my belt before I put that hyphen there.
Well, okay, whatever you want, Walter. And what about Arthur? Hey, you say musical director?
Yes,
you prefer musicals.
I just love theater, whether that comes in the form of musicals or plays, whether I'm directing, teaching kids music, or on stage. As long as I'm in a theater and people come to watch, I'm all for it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here, you two. And congratulations on your marriage.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a brief break. Then when we return, we're going to talk about the Alcott Arts Center. You know, there's a lot of Shakespeare in town. We have Shakespeare outdoors. We have Shakespeare indoors. At Alcott, they have Shakespeare in the parking lot. I guess they're moving it inside because of the rain. Shakespeare in the parking lot. And we're going to talk about that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Hey, it's Junebug, and the momentum is building for Saturday, September 28th down at Knuckleheads. That's when you and I will celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Blues Kitchen with great music and merriment. Go to knuckleheadskc.com for table reservations and tickets. Go to kkfi.org for information on this benefit and other KKFI news. Lock in your dial to 90.1 FM KKFI, and remember, don't forget about these Blues.
What's your point of view? If you've got something important to say, let us know. KKFI recently launched a new community podcast page on our website at kkfi.org. It already hosts an amazing selection of KKFI's on-air programming as podcasts. And we're not done. We want to give you a platform. Do you have a podcast? Or have you always wanted to try, but don't know how? Go to kkfi.org, select Community Podcasts, and click Apply to share your ideas and sign up for classes to learn how. That's kkfi.org/community-podcasts, and we hope to hear your ideas soon.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Jillian Bell gives a star-making performance in the comic drama Brittany Runs a Marathon, the story of an overweight Manhattan party girl who tries to break out of her personal rut through running. It's smart and often funny. The only problem is that this story about a marathon has an issue with its pace.
Still, Whitney Runs a Marathon is well run. Tigers Are Not Afraid is a Mexican horror fantasy for the art house crowd. The drug wars and childhood homelessness crossed paths with magic realism in this disturbing and gritty adult fairy tale. It doesn't all work, but Tigers Are Not Afraid is impressive just the same. Want to see lots of spectacular car wrecks? Then the IndyCar film Rapid Response fills the bill. It's about the rise of emergency medical teams on race sites and the safety protocols that have significantly reduced injuries and fatalities over the years. Rapid Response is a surprisingly engaging documentary. David Crosby, Remember My Name, is a documentary about the notoriously contemptuous rock icon who managed to alienate virtually everyone he worked with while simultaneously making some great pop music. While involving, the movie is as enigmatic as its subject. Rebecca Romijn stars as the head of a witch's coven searching for a virgin sacrifice in the grisly horror comedy Satanic Panic. It ain't subtle, but it may provide a few depraved laughs for the midnight movie crowd. And also opening this week, the evil clown Pennywise is back in the Stephen King horror sequel It Chapter 2. 27 years after defeating the killer clown, the Losers Club reunites to face their enemy once again. Bill Hader, Jessica Chastain, and a first-rate cast add their talents to this three-hour epic. And Hex is a horror thriller about a malevolent force that fouls up a couple's romantic holiday. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. You know, we've had Shakespeare outside in the rain and the heat this summer, and sometimes in the past we've had Shakespeare in the parking lot over at the Alcott Center. Well, they're going to have it inside this year. Here to tell us all about it, we have the director of Two People from Verona. Her name is Susan Proctor. She is the director. She formerly was a professor for a bunch of years anyway at Rockhurst College. How many years? Can I get away with asking you that, Susan?
Sure. I was at Rockhurst for 12 years.
But you've continued even after you retired from college directing things?
Yes, that's one of the reasons I was teaching theater, is I love to direct.
You recently directed 100 Horses.
It was a new play in development written by Steve Carroll, and it was sponsored really by the Edgar Snow Foundation, UMKC, the museum downtown, and I think the Chinese College.
You were on Lady D's show one afternoon when I ran into you.
And that's right.
That's how I knew about it. Also with us is Chuck Green. He is the president of the Alcott organization. Welcome back once again.
Thank you.
We're here to talk primarily about your indoor Shakespeare production called Shakespeare at the Alcott, and we're going to talk about the show Two People from Verona, and we're also going to bring up some other things, too, along the way. But let's turn to Susan first. You are directing Shakespeare. Have you directed Shakespeare at Rockhurst? Probably a lot.
A little bit of Shakespeare at Rockhurst. I've done a lot more Shakespeare in other theaters, but this will be my third time doing Shakespeare with the Alcott Arts Center, and they're a great group to work with, and I love doing their Shakespeare.
Yeah, you probably don't know, but last Monday on the show, Felicia Landre from UMKC was here, and she weighed in on her theory that Shakespeare did not write all of his own plays. Do you have any theories on that?
Well, there are a lot of academic studies talking about the different people that were in his group and how some of them probably wrote with him or maybe wrote scenes. What we do know pretty clearly is that he didn't actually write full manuscripts. He wrote sides for the actors, and he never published his plays. He produced them, but then they were gathered up later by entrepreneurs who found all of these floating sides out there, and they are the ones who actually put the place together, which is why we have different versions of some of the punctuation and some of the wording in the place.
You're doing for this year's production at the Alcott, and they do a Shakespeare every year. It's been inside, it's been outside in the parking lot, it's inside this year, and you selected two people from Verona. Tell us a little bit about that. Where does they fit? That where does that fit in the Shakespeare chronology of doing things? And tell us a little bit about the show.
Okay, the original title of the play is Two Gentlemen of Verona, and we've changed it to Two People to be a little more inclusive. The play is one of his earliest plays, and has a few really important pieces in it. Probably the most notable is the song, Who is Sylvia?, which is a long, beautiful song. The funny thing is, it's comical in the play. It's beautiful, but it's being done by one of the fools in the play. The story is about two best buddies. One gets sent to the big city of Milan to continue his life studies, and the other stays back in Verona because she's in love and doesn't want to leave. Well, eventually the fathers and mothers get together and make her go also to learn more about life. They meet up in Milan, and turns out the one who went first has fallen in love with Sylvia. And as soon as Proteus sees Sylvia, she falls in love with Sylvia and forgets all about her love at home. And the play is about how do we get Sylvia together with the right brother, with the right buddy, Valentine, and how do we get Proteus back with Julia?
Shakespeare loved to do shows where there was a cases of mistaken identity, where there were cases of who's who, who's aligned with who, and that often changes during the course of the play. He must have really enjoyed doing complicated plots like that.
Oh, he did, and he was really good at it. And we have to remember that he wrote these plays for all men casts. So changing genders in a play, really, it almost reads like it was supposed to be a couple of women in love with each other. So it's been really easy to do. When we started this, trying our inclusivity, we were afraid that we were going to have a lot of difficulties with the gender swapping, and it didn't happen at all. It's just been a smooth ride.
Yeah, that's true. Men played both roles, as you suggested, in those days, which made it probably awkward sometimes for some of the actors, because in Romeo and Juliet, for instance, when they would actually be performed, those were both men playing both parts.
Yes.
And that would make it a little difficult sometimes for men of that era to adjust to something like that.
I was going to say, it would, except that these were young men who were trained actors, and you were trained to play a woman until your voice changed, and then you got trained to play a man.
This would fall, I guess, in the comedy version of things. They always say it's comedy, tragedy, or historical dramas. Sounds like a comedy to me.
This one is a comedy, yes.
Yeah. Well, how much freedom do you take with it? I know some people, even at the Shakespeare Festival, they tell me that sometimes they have to change little things here and there.
We have. One thing, we've set it in modern day. We've also, just a few words we've changed occasionally because they don't mean the same thing that they used to mean, and it's more confusing and just not worth trying to stay with the exact same words. But very little of it has changed.
Tell me about your cast.
Well, the cast ranges from age 11 to age about 63. In this play, the servants are actually all of the older people who are acting kind of as mentors rather than servants, because we don't actually have servants these days, usually. The outlaws in the play, there is a scene with outlaws, and the outlaws are supposed to be really kind of scary, but in the end you find out that they're all really just people who got caught in the system somehow. So our outlaws are all very young girls. We have a couple that are in their late teens, like 16, and one of them is 11. They do a great job. It's a very funny scene where they kidnap Valentine and turn him into the captain of their outlaws. That's a little bit about the cast. The main actors, the two buddies from Verona and the woman playing Julia and my stage manager, were all students of mine at Rockhurst, and they saw the audition notice and they decided to come. And it was perfect. It's like an old reunion every time we rehearse. And then the other actors came to auditions or were suggested by one of the other actors to help fill in a role that we maybe hadn't filled in yet. And everybody's getting along beautifully. They're really quite good.
I've heard directors say it both ways. Well, I remember one director telling me, oh, it's just the most difficult thing in the world to direct a production of Shakespeare. There's so many different things to keep track of and all of that. Then I had another director say, oh, no, it's the best material in the world. It's the easiest thing in the world to direct. Well, where do you fall, I should say, within that scale?
I think it's one of the easiest things in the world to direct because Shakespeare actually puts the stage directions in the dialogue. If somebody on stage says, get up off your knees, that means somebody was down on their knees. And so if you pay attention to the script and to the rhythms that he's incorporated, he tells you how to say the lines because it's in iambic pentameter, and occasionally he changes that. And so if he changes the rhythm, you know that something's going on, and it helps the actors figure out how to perform those things. The hardest thing with Shakespeare is just making sure that your actors know what they're saying. Once they know what they're saying, it all makes sense.
What and why they're saying it, I suppose, would also be very important.
And why they're saying it, yeah. And
now, Shakespeare often was commissioned to write plays. I know that.
Yes.
And do you know much about the history of this show? How does this show fit into that spectrum of things?
I don't believe it was commissioned, although he may have been commissioned to do something at a certain time period. I don't know the exact details about this particular play, but it was one of his earliest ones, so he must have been commissioned by the company that he was working with.
Yeah, no, it probably would have been done, during the day, because they didn't have lights in those times. So even if the scene took place at night, it was the day.
Right, and the way they signaled night was to carry a lantern.
Oh, very, very good. Very good. And it would have been a crowd of, I don't know, would have been aristocrats up front and the common folk further back.
Actually, it's just the opposite.
Just the opposite. Okay.
The common folk would be standing in the pit around the front of the stage, and then the aristocrats would be in the seats, which were, I think there's three levels in most of those theaters at that time. There were also some seats very close to the front, but up high, so that if you wanted to be seen, kind of like at the opera, you could buy those most expensive seats.
And usually he managed to get his little digs in. I mean, you notice that there's a lot of maybe underlying politics, sometimes outright politics, but often underlying politics within what he was saying.
Absolutely. He made sure to support whoever the ruling monarch was at the time and say bad things about the families of the opposing monarchs. In most of his plays, there's something like that.
Play, once again, is Two People from Verona, changed from the original title, Two Gentlemen of Verona, and we're speaking with Susan Proctor. She is the director, formerly a professor at Rockhurst University. Do you direct this differently than you would a college production?
Not really. I probably use the same approach to directing wherever I am. It's a collaborative effort. You find out how much the company knows, and then you try and pull them all to about the same place. It means teaching a little bit, and sometimes it means asking people to step down just a little bit. But most of the time, it's the same way I would direct anything.
I would think directing Shakespeare, you'd have a lot of teaching to do, just by the nature of it, because of the pentameter, everything like that.
Right, yes.
Is it a period piece, or what period, if not, what period are you setting it in?
We're setting it in today.
Okay.
So it'll be all very modern dress, and the funny thing is the language doesn't make it seem odd.
In many ways, it survives time. Props, things like that. How accurate do we try to be with things like that, or do we not worry about it?
I think it's really more important to use costumes and props and furniture settings, those things that you really need to tell the story, because it's not about the visuals. It's really about telling the story. It's a very verbal process, although this one's pretty funny.
And it will be presented at the Alcott Arts Center on Saturday, September 14th at 3 o'clock p.m., Sunday the 15th at 3 o'clock p.m., Saturday the 21st at 3 o'clock p.m., and Sunday the 22nd at 3 o'clock p.m. So Saturday, Sunday at the Alcott Arts Center. The number to call for more information is 913-233-2787, or information can be gotten online at alcottartscenter.org. We're speaking with Susan and with Chuck Green, the president of the Alcott Arts Group. You actually were involved with starting it how long ago now?
18 years.
And during that time, you've had a lot of, you do a lot of art gallery shows and things of that nature. This is a play, but you're known primarily for doing your art gallery things.
Oh, yeah. We do the second Saturday art exhibit, so opposed to First Friday. You know, when years ago when they started First Fridays in the Crossroads area, we had a lot of friends that were participating in that, so we never wanted to be in competition with them. So that's why we started Second Saturdays. And so for the months that we're open, our Second Saturdays feature a lot of different artists, some first-time exhibitors, and some that have exhibited many times, and several with us.
You do that. You do have special events. In fact, you have some other events coming up following the Shakespeare play this coming fall.
We do. We're getting ready to finish up an exhibit right now that'll finish up Saturday night. But coming up next month, we've got superhero and sports art exhibits. And we've got four different artists that are coming in, and they'll be exhibiting for the month with us, and it's always a great turnout for it. But some of these are new artists to the public. They've been doing it a while but haven't gotten their names out too far, so it's always our goal to try to help them get some recognition.
Yeah, and you usually have a Halloween event going on too. I've seen your postings over the years. It seems like every Halloween is it.
Used to be Trunk or Treat.
Trunk or Treat, yeah.
Yeah, and anymore it's just Halloween at the Alcott, because we kind of put a spin on it and more of a theatrical spin, especially this year where our theme is Hocus Pocus. So all the ladies on the board have picked out their roles to play, and we're actually auditioning people if they want to participate. It's going to be something that we've never done before, but they'll be dancing and singing and a whole lot of good stuff.
Now, you want them to call this same number or go to your website?
Either one.
To contact you?
Yeah.
All right, that's coming up. Along with the art gallery things, these two events are coming up as well. Now, we want to get to a more serious subject, of course. You've had, over the years, there's been, people have wanted to buy the Alcott property. You, of course, don't want to. You want to keep it as it is. It was a school.
It was.
And it's Alcott because, as I understand it, the schools in the Kansas City, Kansas School District named their schools after famous authors.
A lot of them did.
So
yes.
This would be after Louisa May Alcott, who wrote Little Woman, and I guess Little Men was one of the follow-ups to it as well.
Right.
But developers are pressing you to redevelop your area. I guess they need a change of zoning too, and all of that.
They do.
And you. You have an online petition that you've set up to help you out in that.
We do. We have an online petition. It's at http://chng.it/QWM(DV)YF. And you can take a quick survey, get your name on, or you can get your name on the petition right there. It only takes a couple of minutes, but you can help us get attention when we have to go to City Hall and explain why we're important and, you know, that the arts should stay right in the corridor where we're at, opposed to putting light industrial, which is what they're planning on doing.
Well, you've put a lot of work into the Alcott building as it is.
We have over the years, yes.
And the Alcott is a 501c3, so it's a not-for-profit.
Yes.
And you have arts events in there. Do you have other things other than arts events ever in the building?
Yeah, absolutely. We have art classes every Wednesday night right now until the end of October. And so those are 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And anything from these particular classes are 5 to 18-year-olds. And then we just finished up summer classes, and they've all gone really well this year. We've had full classes all the time. So we know that, you know, we've still got a lot of support, and we've got more people using our facility than ever. But we just need people to know that we want to stay there. We started 18 years ago to save the old building, and when the school board was going to sell it, they were going to sell it to a minimum security prison. So the neighborhood got involved and ended up owning the building and starting our own 501. And we've been learning how to produce art, art exhibits, productions, and all the things to bring joy to life over these years. And our staff is unpaid still to date. And we, all the money that we're getting ready to raise in our capital campaign to redo the building, every penny of that will go into redoing the building. So we're excited because we've been wanting to stay open year-round for many years, but this is the catalyst for us right now, and we're trying to get as much good attention as possible. And like you said, we've been doing this stuff for many years, and there's a whole lot of artists and actors that have been through Alcott that can come back, help us out, gain more attention.
As you just mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you said more people are using it now than have ever used it before.
Right. Yeah, and if we get our facilities in better shape, meaning new windows, new roof, all those type of things, new heat, then we can bring even more in. But right now, with all the debate on whether or not we would get to stay there as an art center, has kind of made us slack back over the last couple of years. And we decided at this point that all of our membership wants us to continue. Nobody wants us to sell. And at this point, what do? You either go out, you punt the ball and try to see how many people want to catch it, or you give up and just throw in the towel. And we've been here for 18 years, so we're not really known for throwing in the towel. Now,
why can't they do their light industrial around you? There's plenty of land there.
Well, and that's what they're talking about doing now if Alcott does get a stay. They've made it clear, though, that it wouldn't be anything really positive to be around an art center if we do stay, and that's from the developer side. The city, they've tried to work with us to, if we did move, you know, offer us different locations that we could do what we want, but we do it all in one facility, and that really helps out, especially when you're having three or four different events all at the same time. You bring a crossover of people in that can meet and go on and do other projects, which has been part of our legacy.
Is there a way to get from your usual website, alcottartcenter.org, to that petition?
There will be later
there
today.
There will be. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. Absolutely. That would be easier for people to navigate to it and sign your petition, perhaps.
All right, and they could learn more about what we do.
Yeah, you have plans. You mentioned what you have coming up. But for the future, say you get to stay there. What plans do you have for future events?
Well, in the long run, we'd like to build a separate building from where we're at now on the west grounds that would be able to be handicap accessible to everyone. And at that point, we could be the multifunctioning art center and foundation that we want to be. Our goals are kind of lofty, you know. We'd love to have solar on the roof. You know, we can think in realms that have never been thought of for an old building because the Art Center Foundation owns the building. Nobody's holding anything over our heads right now. And if there's creative people out there that want to help out, that have some really good ideas that they think could be incorporated into our rebuilding process, we want to talk to them.
Sure. Now, are you going to have an art exhibit along with the play?
Actually, yes, the sports art and superhero art will be hanging up in the galleries as they're doing the plays.
Now, Susan, are you ready for this to go? Shakespeare's very difficult to do. Are they all ready?
Mostly. We still have 2 weeks. They'll be ready. They're where they need to be at this point.
And doing it in more modern garb, I guess, would be an advantage, I guess.
It is. It helps a lot because they can actually provide a lot of the costumes themselves, and that means we don't have to make them and we don't have to buy them. What's really fun, kind of joining with what Chuck said, is we're doing the first and fifth of Shakespeare's acts in the galleries. So the art that is hanging will be our backdrop for the play.
So you'll move from room to room. Another innovative feature, I suppose, that you can do there.
It's the first time we've done this particular style. So, you know, the audience will be mobile. They'll be getting up and going into the galleries, and Susan will give them enough time to move around. But I think it's going to be really interesting and kind of entertaining just to watch the people.
I'm sure it will be. Two people from Verona, and I know the original title was Two Gentlemen from Verona, but as Susan explained, she wants to be more inclusive, so she's using a different title, and Shakespeare can't complain. Not at this point, anyway. Will be happening September 14th and 15th, Saturday and Sunday. Performances at 3 o'clock both days, and again on the following weekend, the 21st and 22nd, a Saturday and a Sunday. Performances at 3 o'clock p.m. both of those days at the Alcott Arts Center, 180 South 18th Street, Kansas City, Kansas. And if you MapQuest things, you need that zip code 66102. The motto at the Alcott Arts Center, and Chuck kind of touched on it earlier, everything positive, nothing negative.
That's right.
And that's the way it's been for 18 years now.
It has been, and, you know, it's been kind of interesting over the years on how many people have approached us and said, we really like your motto. Can we use that? And, you know, it's like anything. Well, of course, everything positive, how could you go wrong with it? And we've even had politicians ask, you know, so I don't think he got elected, but it's still a good motto.
And, it certainly is.
You know, and it helps keep you focused because we can all dwell on the negative things that are in our lives. And if you just choose to look towards the positive side, things turn out better more often.
The number to call for more information, 913-233-2787. And, of course, that website, alcottartscenter.org. You're probably on Facebook as well.
Oh, yes. Alcott Arts Center. Just look at that. Or Keeping the Arts Growing at the Alcott Arts Center is also one of our pages.
And look ahead, more information about the petition.
Yes.
In the days to come. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Chuck Green, the president of the Alcott Arts Center, and Susan Proctor, she is the director of Two People from Verona.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that it's our distinct pleasure to have Susan back. Every time we work together, everything goes so smoothly, and she is well practiced at what she does, but there's always just a sense of sereneness through the process that always makes our job a lot easier.
The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Great jazz for you. Jazz from 1 to 3, then the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.
tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You've been listening to the Arts Magazine Show. Coming up next, jazz music, jazz afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m., then the blues from 3 to 6 right here at KKFI. Currently 89 degrees in Kansas City. This afternoon, mostly sunny with a high near 90. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 73 degrees. Tuesday, more of the same, partly sunny with a high near 90 degrees.